This is Simon Walker, chairman of Constellation, the Huntsworth Group of communications agencies, Grayling, Citygate, New Rogerson, Red, and Quiller. Over the past few weeks, we've been holding breakfast briefings on navigating business through the COVID-19 noise with leaders of business, the media, and politics. The feedback from our invited audience was so strong, we thought we should share them on a wider platform. So here are the first four, which we've turned into 20-minute podcasts, which I hope you will find insightful and useful. We live in uncertain times. As a former Director General of the Institute of Directors, I know that many businesses up and down this country are feeling the economic strain of coronavirus. Uncertain times mean change and innovation, which the communications industry has to embrace if it's to help and support its clients. Whether it's about training, employee engagement, risk, or reputation, the times ahead will be challenging but offer huge and exciting opportunities for businesses. We, as advisors, just need to be even more creative and innovative in order to help clients through the emergence out of COVID. Our third briefing was with Oliver Shah, business editor of the Sunday Times and a former Business Journalist of the Year. On back to work day one for some, and with the housing markets reopening, we hear his take on where we were at that moment.
Indeed. Good morning, Simon, and thank you for the introduction. It is back to work day for some. Many of us, of course, have been working for the past 6 weeks, and the Sunday Times, like others, has been on a journey of learning in terms of how you do things remotely. And like many business people I speak to, I've been amazed at how adaptable and flexible people have turned out to be and how well in general the technology works. Putting together a Sunday paper is a challenge. At the best of times, you have limited people resources given financial pressures, and the news cycle, as everyone knows in this call, gets ever faster and more competitive with the likes of Bloomberg and the Newswires muscling in on the traditional newspapers. And so putting together a paper is never easy. And the dual challenges of the coronavirus crisis have been that, A, everyone's working remotely. So reporters who are used to having, you know, breakfasts, coffees, lunches, dinners with contacts, being able to go out and do interviews and gather all the on-the-ground colour that makes articles sing, have been working from bedrooms and spare rooms, often with kids milling around their feet. And the challenges of, you know, doing things remotely and speaking to existing contacts but not being able to make new contacts in the same way, and having to file copy without discussing it face-to-face and without sort of speaking to designers face-to-face is a challenge. But also when you're covering such a big story, you want to present it in a way that jumps off the page, and you need all the bells and whistles and charts and features and fact boxes and diagrams and things that give the reader a sense of the gravity of a situation. And managing that remotely has been a challenge. We've generally got through it. I think like a lot of people, we'd reached the weekend and we're desperate for some kind of a path out. Everyone feels the novelty, insofar as it was any, of working from home is truly worn off now. And people were looking for some kind of glimmering of hope. And I think in a sort of shambolic and quite caveated and sometimes self-contradicting way, Boris Johnson did offer a bit of that. And as you say, we're starting to see some sectors go back to work. Construction obviously has been working to a degree throughout this, and building sites, I suppose, can be adapted quite easily. So the rate of building slows down and people are more distanced, and you have one person on a bit of scaffolding per time. For other sectors, restaurants, hotels, gyms, anything that involves human contact and buzz, it's going to be a much harder path back, isn't it? And I think we've rightly seen the furlough scheme extended and tapered to reflect that. But I have a few other reflections on coronavirus from my point of view to share with you, and then we'll go into the Q&A, as you mentioned. The first point, which maybe is not a completely new one, but I think is the overwhelming impression looking back over the past 6 weeks. This has accelerated a lot of change in different areas that was going to happen anyway. And that change has been compressed into a very short period of time. And that's brought challenges and problems for leaders and operators. If you look at an industry like retail, which I know well, a huge number of companies have been staggering along, partly supported by QE and low interest rates for the past 10 years, since 2008. We've never really had the reckoning we might have had from the rise of online falling high street footfall, and we're now starting to see that. So I think you're going to see a lot of those companies swept away, and you're going to see a big realignment of property ownership, bank loans into the sector, relationships between tenants and landlords change. I think if you look at other industries like banking, on the retail side, you know, a lot of people who would have been reluctant to use online services in the past would have, you know, toddled down to their local branch or post office, have been forced online. And I think when you make that transition and a grandson or grandkid or whoever helps you use an app for the first time, and you realize actually it's quite easy and quite intuitive, I don't think you go back. So we're going to see seismic change in a whole range of industries, from consumer habits being shifted. And things like office space use, which companies have griped about for a long time. In general, I think this experiment has shown that remote working is possible, it is doable. The technology and the connectivity are there to enable it at a scale we wouldn't have thought possible before. A call like this with, you know, 50 or 100 participants without much lag, hopefully, it just shows that these things are doable in a scale we hadn't thought before. Second big thought is that the unprecedented amount of government support we've seen pumped into markets across the board, from staff wages to C bills to B bills, to some of the more bespoke support packages we're seeing discussed, introduces moral hazard on a scale we haven't seen before over a very short period of time. In 2008-09, we talked about that with reference to the banking sector, the implicit taxpayer underwrite having maybe encouraged some behaviours that wouldn't have been there otherwise. Companies are now having to adapt very quickly to a world where, even if they indirectly in some way benefit from some of this government support, there is, in the medium term at least, a new onus on them to behave in a different way. So we've seen the banks pressured not to pay dividends, some of the insurers pressure not to pay dividends. The Daily Times, our sister paper, splashed its Monday paper on a company backed by Bain, the private equity firm, paying a dividend when it had furloughed staff. And one of the big stories today is a subsidiary of Ineos, Jim Ratcliffe's chemicals empire, looking for a government loan, despite Jim Ratcliffe having gone to Monaco to avoid tax and having a fortune valued at about 18 billion. So I think in the medium term, it's a bit of a common sense test for companies. It's what is the balance of responsibility across stakeholders, and anyone benefiting in any way from government underwrite needs to think about that in the medium term, because there is a high reputational price to be paid from miscalculating that or being too cocksure in the short term. And longer term, I've written about this in my columns already, but I do think that a lot of the more sort of airy-fairy talk about capitalism being reformed, you hear that stuff around these inflection points, and it doesn't tend to happen. I think, you know, capitalism is a strong plant, isn't it? It grows back very easily. And I think actually coming out of this, you're going to see for the next few years more inequality, which I don't say with any pleasure, obviously, but I think it is a fact that you're going to see, you know, higher unemployment. You're going to see the blue-collar workers and those on lower incomes bearing more of the burden. I think you're going to see a shift to automation speeding up. You're going to see an employer's market. So you're going to see a stronger hand for bigger companies. And I think you're going to see the ones who survive take a bigger market share. You can see in the airline industry, IAG / British Airways doing its absolute best to kind of shunt Virgin towards insolvency. And you're going to see some, you know, below the lofty words, some very ruthless behavior over the next few years. I think you're going to see survivors take a bigger chunk of the pie. So whether governments and regulators on the competition side need to play a stronger role in the future to guard against that, I don't know. But I think animal spirits and forces rather than anything more highfalutin is going to be the determinant of the next few years. And the final point, we've seen the Telegraph splash today, probably on Rishi Sunak's internal memo warning of the 300 billion plus public deficit we're going to come out of this year with. The corporate household and government debt overhang from this very short period of time is going to be quite profound. And I think the changes we're going to see to deal with that, whether it's rising income taxes or the government having to write off a load of C bills or B bills loans and swap them for equity, I think is going to be a big story over the next few years and could well restrict our ability to recover in any kind of V-shaped pattern. But those are my four main thoughts, and I'm very happy to go to Q&A.
Oliver Shah went on to tackle questions from a wide range of senior business leaders representing every sector of the economy. Among his key conclusions were, for retail, the crisis has brought a long overdue reckoning. It's brought about a lot of change that was overdue. We've never really had the reckoning we might have had from the rise of online. Instead, we've had a lot of poor performance staggering along, partly supported by quantitative easing and low interest rates. A lot of those performers will be wiped out. We can also expect to see the relationship between tenants and landlords changing. This will be felt in our town centres. It's going to be a big challenge for high streets and town centres, because a lot of these companies are mainstays. But it also brings the opportunity to redesign them with more mixed communities, better parking, more open spaces. This needs big, joined-up thinking from central and local government, and it also requires the private sector to play its part. Consumer habits have also changed. A lot of people who have been reluctant to use online services such as banking in the past have been forced to do so during the lockdown, and they won't go back. Consumer habits have changed, and we can expect to see seismic change in a whole range of industries as a result of that. But services will continue to thrive. The services sector is very adaptable and flexible, full of clever people, and they will find ways to get around issues like the travel restrictions. Remote working is with us to stay. The lockdown has shown us that remote working is possible on a scale we wouldn't have dreamed of before, and this could have a big impact on how companies think about office space. Government support brings with it huge reputational risk. The unprecedented amount of government support has introduced moral hazard on a scale we haven't seen before. For companies that have benefited from these measures, even indirectly, there is a new onus on them to behave differently and a high reputational price to be paid if they don't. Capitalism will bounce back, but there will be greater inequality. We've seen from previous crises that capitalism is strong and grows back easily, but we are likely to see more inequality as those on lower incomes bear more of the burden from unemployment and greater automation. Survival of the fittest. We will see bigger companies gain a stronger hand, and those that do survive take a bigger market share. Behind the lofty words, we can also expect to see some pretty ruthless behavior. Just look at the way British Airways owner IAG has been doing its best to shunt Virgin towards insolvency. How we pay for this is the big question. How we pay off the huge debt burden incurred as a result of this crisis is going to be a major story and could well restrict our ability to recover quickly. Many small businesses will never be able to repay the loans, and we may see a mass conversion of debt to equity in the future. In terms of possible tax rises, property seems to be an obvious area, and at least some adjustment of council tax bans could be sensible. Government indecision will cost lives and the economy. We were late going into lockdown and muddled coming out. We've ended up carrying a higher death toll than we needed to had we taken decisive action earlier, and the economy will suffer more than it might have done. Businesses won't fight for a Brexit delay. Business feels it has pushed as hard as it can against Brexit, and there's little upside in fighting the government anymore. However, the Eurozone economies are in a big mess and can ill afford another hit next year. So we could see some sort of fudge emerging with a more sketchy agreement by the end of this year, pending detailed talks next year. A more polarized newspaper market. Globally, we can expect to see newspapers whittled down to a few titles, accelerating the polarization between high-quality subscription models and free, lower-quality offerings at the other end of the market. This has implications for society, as access to high quality and analysis is limited to those who can afford to pay for it. We hope you enjoyed this insightful and interesting discussion.